And welcome to this, the first of the March 2017 Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies with your host, Lisa Schmeiser. With me, as always, is Philip Michaels.
That is ambitious that this is the first of the March ones.
We're going to do two this month.
Are you kidding me?
No.
I did not agree to this. I didn't. I have a union contract. I'll pull it out here.
I'll pull it out here.
Sound effects. Yeah, well, I realized as I said it.
Yep. We record this in our bedroom, by the way.
I keep my union contract in my pants.
Oh, God. Welcome to my nightmare.
March.
All right,
so yes. We're doing two shows, huh?
We should. This is Pledge Month, Phil.
It's Pledge Month. Oh, my
yes,
God.
Yes, it is Pledge Month. Mm. And this is the time of the year when we do remind our listeners about supporting the podcast. This and other podcasts in the Incomparable Network. And our listeners can do that by,
I assume, writing a big fat check.
By being a member of the Incomparable.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's how you do it.
And the great thing is, listeners can either sign up to be monthly members, or they can do annual pledges to help support a specific podcast directly. We do have some fantastic sponsors of our podcast and people who support it.
Yep.
And I'd like to point out,
I really appreciate the people who support our podcast and support none of the other podcasts.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course. I think that's great. I think when you pledge to support Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies, on the little memo line of your check, you should write, and none of the others.
The point is,
I could list some podcasts that I specifically do not want you to support in the Incomparable Network.
No, that's not how it works, because
no, it is how it works.
Dude, you if you come at the D&D podcast, you best not miss.
I'm not going to come at those guys. They have weaponry.
No.
Made up weaponry.
And the thing
weaponry.
Is Incomparable members have their own Slack channel, and you can actually talk to us.
What?
Yes. You can
no
talk.
No one told me this.
Yeah. Well, you aren't a member, obviously.
No, I'm not.
But the point is,
that's money.
You become a member. You can join the Phil and Lisa channel on the Zeppelin Slack, and you can post questions. We're happy to answer them. We're happy to take
Lisa
requests.
Lisa will be answering them.
Yes.
Obviously.
This is true.
I don't use the Slack.
But the point is, there's lots of great reasons to become a member. Here's how you
More of a hip chat man myself.
Oh my God, here is
you
how
can
you
post me some questions on hip chat. Question one, what are you doing on hip chat? Can be the first question you ask.
Philip, we really do have to tell people how to support the Incomparable.
Okay.
All right.
I'll take a drink.
Yeah, you do that. Clink, clink with the ice. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. If you just check the box for Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies, your entire contribution comes to us after a few network fees are taken out.
That's the best box to check.
If you listen to other podcasts on The Incomparable, for example,
you're wasting your life if you're doing that.
Hey, I co-host the Flash Cast.
Okay.
So you want to walk that one back, mister?
Yep, that's a good one.
All right.
Support that one.
If you listen to other podcasts,
like the Flash one, that's good.
On The Incomparable Network, you can also check their boxes, and your contribution will be shared equally by all the shows you want to support. As a thank you for supporting us, members receive extras like bonus audio, bootleg feeds of The Incomparable, and a members-only Slack group. Since this is pledge season, this month, a lot of the shows in the network will be posting bonus episodes just for members.
Mm.
Our bonus episode
seems like more of a threat for some of these shows.
Well, here's the thing is I'm not promising anything because I'm just dropping this news on Phil right now.
Oh, dear.
If our pledges reach a certain amount this month, I may consent to watch Suicide Squad with Phil.
No, I have nothing further.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a cast.
Would you watch it with me?
It's an Academy Award winning movie.
Well, then clearly we have to. So
the Suicide Squad won more Academy Awards than Alfred Hitchcock ever did.
Yeah.
So
here's
piker.
The thing. This is our special members only episode that we'll be doing for Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies. It's Phil and Lisa. Phil and Lisa share their thoughts about Suicide Squad after having watched it.
Yep.
And I want to point out that Incomparable member Adam Nelson is the one who actually suggested this for our member episode. So this is another reason to become an Incomparable member is you can figure out how to torture podcast hosts.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think Adam Nelson really doesn't like us.
Mm.
Not really a fan of our work.
Well, Adam Nelson is going to get his money's worth this month.
Yeah, I guess so.
After he pledges. Yeah. Anyway, there are contribution levels here at the $5 a month, $10 a month, and $20 per month level. There are annual equivalents as well. Mm-hmm. And if you're already a member, just go ahead and increase your pledge a little bit. You'll get some special goodies from Jason Snell in return.
Yeah.
So, again, if you want to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. Thanks so much for listening to this message. Let's get on with the episode, Phil.
Special goodies from Jason Snow on the way.
No one wants your special goodies.
Yeah, Phil. No one wants mine. Dear Lord.
All right, we're down to the regular episodes.
Yes.
So, Phil, why don't you list some of the trailers we're going to talk about?
We're going to talk about this is going to be our Charlie Hunnam
episode. It's a very Charlie episode,
yeah. Yes, because there's a new King Arthur colon,
yeah,
Legend of the Sword is out.
Yes.
Which we've discussed on a previous podcast, I believe, in our Comic-Con one, because that also had King Arthur colon Legend of the Sword,
yes,
as well. But now there's a new, better trailer.
It's a much more please go see this movie kind of trailer, where we talk about why I'm excited about the trailer and apprehensive about the movie.
We will also talk about The Lost City of Zed.
Yes, which
another Charlie Hunnam joint.
Charlie Hunnam and his magnificent wax mustache, yes.
And, Boss Baby and Alien Covenant. Alien colon Covenant.
Boss Baby and Alien Covenant. It's not a buddy comedy. Those are two actual separate movies.
Two different movies, yes. Though I think they could be combined into a double feature that would, the little ones would really love.
God, no.
Getting themselves hooked into the alien multiverse.
Oh, Lord. So should we start with the...
Let's start with Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah, there is so much there.
So King Arthur colon Legend of the Sword.
Yeah, this differs substantially from the other trailer in that I feel like...
I think there's a common thread in that I watched both and said, well, that looks like shit. So I think they have that going for them.
You know, Phil, people,
thematically,
people do listen to this podcast with their kids.
Kids? I said spit.
Yes.
They look like spit.
Huge globules. This one seems to have a little bit more of a... So the first trailer is basically Charlie Hunnam and his muscles are having an identity crisis.
Yep.
Oh, when are the muscles?
Oh, Arthur, you are so muscular.
Yeah, this one features the young Pope getting all magnificently irritated by things.
Lisa,
that's Jude Law. Yeah.
I want to remind you, Lisa, that Jude Law is one of our greatest actors and one of our youngest popes.
You love that Sean Penn bit from the Oscars. I really do. I feel like you need to explain the reference to younger viewers. Younger listeners.
This, I think, was Chris Rock's first hosting stint.
It was more in Los Angeles, honey. Yeah. So it was over...
This was a long time ago.
This was like 12, 13 years ago.
And,
God, we've been together a while.
Yes, we have. And Chris Rock made a joke at Jude Law's expense, and Sean Penn...
Who was going to present the next award.
Presented the next award, and who basically had his sense of humor surgically removed when he married Madonna.
Yeah. I feel like it was a survival move.
Yeah. Walks on stage and says very pointedly and very tersely, I would like to remind the host that Jude Law is one of our greatest actors.
He was such a magnificently petty moment.
Yes.
So every time Jude Law pops up on a screen, and mind you, this has been going on in our household now for 12 or 13 years. Every time Jude Law shows up, Philip says, I would like to remind you all of it.
I would like to remind the host.
Yeah, that Jude Law.
So there you go.
And anyway, I was watching The Young Pope on HBO earlier this year, and... it's just magnificently loopy.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Jude Law is King Vortigern in this, and instead of the first trailer, which was Charlie Hunnam and his muscles have an ID crisis like so many young men today, what shall I do? This one basically sets up the stakes, which is that Charlie Hunnam's dad, played by Eric Bana, was killed by Vortigern, Jude Law, your young pope, or someone like him, and he and his muscles will find themselves, they'll find a sword, they'll find a young woman lying in a pond, that light comes into play at some point, and then they find somebody who's straight out of Robin Hood with, it's a black man who will give you all the wisdom you need, White King.
Digimon Hansu.
Who has, basically built a career playing this kind of role, frankly.
And he's Bedivere in this one.
Yeah. And, So this one gives you, I feel like it gives you the whole movie from character's motive to backstory to object and event that sets the plot in motion to CGI CGI heavy finale, and it's all done to Led Zeppelin. It is like what would happen if a bunch of boys from 1984 got their hands on a computer and a joint and were like, this is the perfect movie.
All that movie needs is a guy with a wizard painted on his van.
Yeah. And like three women in bikinis from Heavy Metal magazine. Yeah. It's just, it is, I don't want to see the movie because at this point I don't feel like the movie can live up to the trailer. But I love that trailer for being a magnificent hot mess. Squires of Anarchy is where it's at as far as I'm concerned.
As I was watching the beginning of the new trailer.
Uh-huh. Oh look, Aidan Gillen's in this too.
As Goose Fat Bill.
Mm.
I don't. Is that part of the Arturian legend? You're the expert.
No, not that I can recall.
Goose Fat Bill?
My guess is he's probably one of the posse and he'll say something funny and or be weaselly because that's kind of Aidan Gillen's...
So I was watching the trailer and Eric Bana pops up on the screen.
Oh, poor Eric Bana.
And that was my thought. It's you know, I would like to remind the host that Eric Bana is actually a pretty good actor.
So, again, let's tell another Los Angeles story.
Yeah.
So, Phil and I went to go see Troy.
Troy.
And we went to see it at the...
The Man's Chinese Theater. Yes. Which now has a different name, but it's the Chinese Theater. It's you've seen it.
Yeah, you've been the hands and the cement and the whole nine yards.
I would also like to point out I saw the 25th anniversary release of Godfather at this theater, so I don't just go to crappy movies at the Chinese theater, but we had a visitor in town and she wanted to go to Hollywood,
and so you know you do that.
And so you go there and let's go see a movie. Troy is playing there. Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, it looked epic.
And
we went. Mm-hmm. And I got in trouble with my fellow movie guys.
You were making comments. You were MST3K'ing that
not
bad boy.
Not much.
Yeah, well, there was a particularly allegedly poignant part of the movie where
The thing is there's Peter O'Toole in the movie.
Well, Peter O'Toole is great.
He plays King Priam.
Yeah.
And Eric Bana actually plays Hector. Mm-hmm. And as everybody who knows mythology knows, Hector gets killed horribly at the hands of Achilles.
Yeah.
Achilles
played by Brad Pitt, who spends the entire movie looking like he's been asked a math problem.
Yeah. And, you know,
if two boats leave Athens at 5 p.m.
I feel like Brad Pitt's cognitive abilities are directly linked to the amount of carbohydrates he's allowed to consume. And in this movie, his perfect musculature tells me that, like, there was no bread for 18 months. So, there was a part in the part where I got in trouble in two parts. Because the first part is where Peter O'Toole as King Priam goes to Achilles to beg for the body of Hector, because Achilles, since he is, you know, one of Greek mythology's greatest jerk stores, has of course tied the body to a chariot and is defiling it by running the chariot in circles and just being generally irritable.
Well, but that's because Achilles' roommate,
Achilles' gal pal, as it were,
has been killed. Yeah, so
Achilles is not taken out. They really try to butch up Achilles in this too, because they throw in Rose Byrne with with the subplot there with Briseis, which is number two, where I start laughing. Anywho, to get back to Peter O'Toole goes and he breaks out like every tool in the British thespian toolbox, and he's delivering this beautiful monologue, and like you can see the tears coming from his eyes, and his hands are raised in supplication, and every line in his body is bowed with grief, and you can feel the anguish in his heart as he goes on, and then the camera spins to Brad Pitt, and hand to God, he looked like an ape in a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah, like a monkey who has just been explained fire.
And I couldn't help it. I just started laughing, and the woman next to me got really upset.
Yeah.
That I was like...
Yeah.
So, no. And then the second part was, of course, when Briseis falls into the hands of the camp followers, or what happens. Yeah. The woman's like, oh, I bet you're laughing now. And I'm like, actually, it is kind of funny, because there was Brad Pitt and doing laps in the background screaming, Briseis!
You've undersold this moment, because the lady, the filmgoer literally turned to you and said, well, do you think it's funny now?
And I said,
and you were all... Yes, actually.
I do.
It's quite funny.
which took the...
Yeah.
I'm sure she has spent, like, the last 12, 13 years going, this movie was written for me by that really nasty woman.
It would be really funny if she's, like, an incomparable listener. And she is going to, like, oh, well, they're not getting my pledge money now.
I'm taking money from them.
Yeah. Goodies from Jason Snell aside. Hi.
Oh, for God's sake. Okay. Yeah.
But, Eric Bana, quite good in that.
No, he's great as Hector, because we watched him, and he was literally the only loss that we felt through the entire movie, because you can tell he's like, I'm going to go out, I'm going to get killed, because idiot Orlando Bloom can't keep his hands off Diane Kruger. how is this my life?
And you've seen and Munich. Mm-hmm. You've seen Munich, and I haven't. And, yeah. He you liked him in that as well.
Yeah, that movie is... It's a great movie right up until the sex scene.
Yeah, the end is not...
The man who directed E.T. does not have an eye for the erotic. Let's just put it that way.
I have another theory about Steven Spielberg.
Uh-huh.
He can't end movies.
Yeah, that's a fair thing.
Because I saw Lincoln, you did not.
Mm.
And the end of Lincoln...
If it does not end in the theater.
No. There's a scene where he's all, well, we... And I'm simplifying here for the purposes of discussion, but it's basically, well, we sure got that Emancipation Proclamation passed. That was great. Good work, everyone. Well, I'm off to the theater. And he's walking down the hall.
And that's it.
And if it would have ended there, you would have said, oh, that's a really powerful ending.
Because he knows not what's ahead. But
because we know what's going
to
happen.
But he dared to hope for a more perfect union. That would be perfectly tragic.
Yeah, it would be perfectly tragic. It would be a great ending, but they then have to cut to, like, no, he's been shot, and so Stan Waterston can do the now he belongs to the ages. And then they have a flashback to Lincoln's second inaugural, I want to say. And it's just, okay, you had a great ending, and you just kept going.
Yeah.
And that to me is Steven Spielberg in a nutshell. He just cannot stop himself from, well, this is a pretty good movie, but what would really help is another 10 minutes.
But yeah, no, Munich is great. Munich is, well, I would say 7/8 of Munich is great.
Yeah.
And Bana's really great in that. I like his Hulk, and I realize it's a controversial statement, because that movie is... I can see what Ang Lee was trying to do with that movie.
There's only one Hulk to me.
Mark Ruffalo?
Nope. He's Bill Bixby.
Oh. No.
You wouldn't like him when he's angry, Lisa.
The Ang Lee Hulk movie has tons of problems, but there are interesting things in it. And Eric Bana's performance is one of the most interesting things. He's consistently one of the better things about the movies he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he just keeps getting cast in... complete flaming piles.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say a word, but I've been reminded that children
and
are listening
I feel
to this.
Like I sort of feel like Eric Bana's presence as a doomed patriarch in King Arthur Legend of the Sword, which we were talking about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. all over the map here.
Yeah, like I feel like his presence here as the doomed patriarch, probably Uther, is it doesn't bode well for this movie.
So that is King Arthur: Legend of the Sword.
Yeah.
I mean,
if I saw the movie for free, I'd be happy with it, but I can't see paying money for it right now.
Right. The only reason to maybe see it in the theater is it might be one of those movies that is more enjoyable when it's 40 feet high in front of you as opposed to on a TV screen or on a the back of someone's seat on a plane.
Good point.
So,
all right, moving on to The Lost City of Zed.
The Lost City of Zed.
Which also stars Charlie Hunnam, this time as an intrepid explorer who is obsessed with finding civilization in the Amazon. Basically, the thing he wants to prove is that white Northern European civilization isn't the apex or even the first foundational civilization, but that rather sophisticated cultures can arise and do arise anywhere in the world. The way the movie is positioned is that this is a dude who it's meant to capture the spirit of the Age of Enlightenment, the Age of Exploration, and the optimism of the turn of the 20th century, briefly interrupted by World War I, where the idea was that science, exploration, and knowledge would be what continued to lift people out of the cultural dark ages and into an era of wisdom and prosperity for all.
Yeah.
Like, that was a real theme in a lot of literature at the time. And it's clear that this is supposed to be something that motivates him. And then over the course of the trailer, we are led to believe that he's driven by darker forces and he's gripped by an obsession that he can't quite understand. And, has a little bit of a Heart of Darkness feel to it, especially when he's, you know, painting the stripes of blood across his face. What I worry about is with this one is I worry it's going to descend into at play in the fields of the Lord type territory. Well, have you ever seen that?
I have not.
Yeah. There was a really unfortunate micro genre of movies back in the 80s and early 90s where the theme behind all those movies is the rainforest primeval is a great thing going and white people just screw it up.
Yeah.
Because there was also that awful Sean Connery, Lorraine Bracco.
Oh,
Medicine
yeah.
Man.
Medicine Man. That is exactly it.
And then there's the mission with...
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay. I will... No. So we're slapping the button.
No, I'm not saying the mission's bad. I'm saying that's the genre.
Yeah, it is the genre.
Mosquito
and in
Coast.
Fact, and in fact, yeah. watching this movie, uh-huh. watching this trailer, I should
uh-huh.
say,
yeah.
My first two thoughts were mm-hmm. seeing Charlie Hunnam's wax mustache.
Yeah.
Swashing about the screen.
That's an actor who commits to facial hair, though.
I thought, rather than watch The Last City of Zed, I would rather just watch Zed, the mm-hmm. Costa Gavras mm-hmm. political thriller from 1969.
Yeah.
Or, mm-hmm. if you want to watch a story about how white people ruin everything in the jungle, uh-huh. watch The Mission, starring yeah. Jeremy Irons
yeah.
and Robert De Niro, sporting the worst Brooklyn accent of a yeah. Portuguese man of war.
But am I not right that was like a thing that
no, it was definitely a thing.
And I think it
peaked with Apocalypto.
I think that was actually my theory is that a lot of these movies got greenlit and pushed through right after the Iran-Contra. And it was kind of a reaction to U.S. policy and politics through the 1980s and the I wouldn't say cognitive dissonance, but the discomfort a lot of people had when liberation theology got cracked down on, because liberation theology was the profile in the press was, hey, these are people who are, you know, carrying on the social justice tradition of the 1960s and 70s. And then you had the head of the Catholic Church going, nope, not happening. And since he was working hard to dethrone communism at the time, people were super confused about that.
Yeah.
But my theory is that first that got started. And remember, there was a really big environmental reawakening during the last half of the 1980s, too, where people started to get really concerned about what was going on. And they noticed that, hey, when you denude the rainforest, you substantially affect the air quality all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so these things get together, they make for big sexy pitches. Next thing you know, you have Daryl Hannah running around naked with Aidan Quinn. yeah. And you get this whole genre where basically it's like this soupy, wet, bug-infested rainforest is paradise on earth. And again, once again, white people ruin it. And this movie kind of follows in that rich tradition of white people do not understand the rainforest, which entirely fair point, I hasten to add. And Outside Magazine's had a number of very good articles recently on human smuggling through rainforests and all the terrible, terrible ways it can go wrong. And Charlie Hunnam, to his credit, is a different accent than he does in King Arthur.
Yeah.
Acting, he can do it.
Yeah, sure he can. But, I actually want to talk about that.
Yeah. So moving on. This trailer doesn't make me want to see it, the movie.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, there's a lot of cliches and seen it already stuff packed into it.
Yeah.
That said, it's going to be interesting to watch how the Hunnam thing happens this year, because...
Is Charlie Hunnam good? That's sort of my question for this episode.
You're asking somebody who got paid to watch Sons of Anarchy.
That's why I'm asking you. Who better
yeah.
to ask, is Charlie Hunnam good at what he does?
Well, he can't master the American R.
No, he cannot. He cannot do an American accent.
But I've gone back and skipped through seasons of Sons of Anarchy to rewatch favorite episodes.
Uh-huh.
And I think the strength and of television is you can watch how a character changes over the course of seasons if the actor who's playing them chooses to shade that performance and show it. And the character that Charlie Hunnam plays in every season of Sons of Anarchy, he does a good job of tracking and changing the character's behavior over time,
mm-hmm.
which to me means that this is somebody who doesn't just go hit his marks, say brother a few times and do the fake violence and go home. He's somebody who did a great job of inhabiting that specific character. I've also seen him in, what the heck was it called? Green Street?
Green Street Hooligans?
Yeah, I'm going to look up his IMDb thing for you.
That was the movie with Elijah Wood, right?
Again, I'm looking at it. I would say based on Sons of Anarchy, he was a great television actor.
Mm-hmm.
But
does it translate well to the big screen?
Again, I don't know.
Other thing I've seen him in is Pacific Rim.
Which, dude, he was the least interesting thing about Pacific
Rim. Yeah, exactly. Green Street Hooligans. It was.
My God, he was great in Cold Mountain. I forgot about that. He plays a homicidal albino in Cold Mountain, and he's really good.
I believe that was actually the movie that inspired the Jude Law clip. Chris Rock.
That's right.
Because it was, whoever made Cold Mountain didn't make it for me, Chris Rock said.
Yeah. No, he was great in Green Street Hooligans, which is a movie that I love and would encourage people to find on cable if they can. He's just demented and awful in Cold Mountain. Mm-hmm. And just a place that... I feel like Cold Mountain suffers because it kind of came out the same time as... I'm looking up the Skeet Ulrich movie I'm thinking of. Ride with the Devil.
Ah.
Ang Lee's Ride with the Devil, which has a number of memorable psychopaths in it as well, one of whom is played by Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, who is one of my favorite nut bar actors.
I'm chuckling because I can take or leave Family Guy.
Yeah.
But one of the best throwaway jokes they ever had on Family Guy was they talked about shooting Skeet. And they wheel in Skeet Ulrich.
Aww.
And, why did you do that to me? And they have the Cleveland character say, there's nothing good about you or what you do.
Okay, I take it back. Ride with the Devil is 1999 and Cold Mountain is 2003.
Yeah, well, that's 4 years. That's anything within a five-year window is...
But again, like in terms of memorable psychopaths, Charlie Hunnam's nearly mute albino goes the distance. I know. I was like, you took Charlie Hunnam and put him in powder makeup. What the what?
My garage band is named Charlie Hunnam's Nearly Mute Albino.
So here's the thing. He's a fine... I feel like this year is the year we discover whether he's actually going to be able to carry a movie.
Yeah.
Because
he was going to be in 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, God, I know. I couldn't believe... And then he was like, nope, scheduling conflicts.
Nope, I read the script and oh my spleen.
My schedule, it hurts.
No.
No, I was so relieved.
I've got a bad case of the want to do something else's.
But again, remember you and I both agree he's like the least interesting thing about Pacific Rim.
Yep.
And he was up for Thor and he lost that role to Chris Hemsworth. And what I wonder is if it's because Chris Hemsworth, who, well, not an actor, is a movie star.
Well, sure.
And Hunnam may just be an actor.
Yeah.
So we'll see this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Charlie Hunnam portion of the...
event. Yeah.
Of the show.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to do next?
Oh, God, let's get Boss Baby over with.
Yeah, Boss Baby.
So I took my daughter to see... what did I take her to see?
Sing?
Yeah. No, God, no.
Trolls?
No. It wasn't Moana, because that was November.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm blanking on what I took her to see.
Yeah.
But long story short, Boss Baby was one of the previews that played before it. And you could feel... Oh, it was the Lego Batman movie.
Lego Batman, sure.
Okay, there. Thank you.
You liked.
And we'll get to that in the movies we saw thing.
Yeah.
But Boss Baby was one of the previews, and you could actually feel the air go out of the... Like, every adult in the theater was just like...
So I did not go see Lego Batman with y'all.
No, you did not.
So I just watched the trailer moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute that from the creators of Shrek popped up on the screen, I believe my reaction was because creators of Shrek says to me, well, we're going to throw in a bunch of dumb pop culture references that will become dated within
the minute this thing is released.
Five minutes of this being released, and it'll be half of the movie is going to be, hey, adults, we know you have to take your kids to the movie, so wink.
Yeah. And that's, I actually find that to be deeply insulting.
I really do. You know, one of the things I do enjoy about Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Is they don't do that. Zootopia, which I have my complaints with, and Moana, which is okay.
Yeah.
They don't do that. They actually commit to telling a story, and if you want to give yourself over to the adventure, that's great, and if you don't, it's only 90 minutes of your life. But whereas the DreamWorks people just seem... Hell, adults, spending time with your children and taking them to the movies is awful. So let's make a movie that the adults can enjoy too, or at least laugh at.
Well, the thing is, though, and the reason the DreamWorks stuff is so frustrating is because it's done so poorly.
Uh-huh.
And as a counterexample, I'm going to give you Sesame Street. More specifically, the movie parodies that Sesame Street has been doing with Cookie Monster.
Right.
You can look these up on YouTube. They have a Karate Kid takeoff called The Biscotti Kid.
Yes.
And it's basically a mashup of the first two Karate Kid movies, only starring Cookie Monster. And at one point when they break out a Peter Cetera-esque, Gloria of Love-esque type song, I was on the floor laughing, and so was my daughter, but for entirely different reasons than I was.
Right.
And that's when you know it succeeded, because it's something that the kids can get on a level that is right where they are developmentally.
Yeah.
And the adults get it because they know what the source material is referencing.
Whereas in Boss Baby, they do a Glengarry Glenn Ross joke.
In the trailer, no
less. Yeah. Which, you know, I appreciated David Mamet joke as much as the next guy, but our 6-year-old is not going to sit there and go,
cookies are for closers, ha ha.
What a clever comment on early 1990s cinema.
Yeah, and she's not going to understand. All she sees is somebody who's being mean about cookies, and she's like, I don't get it. Yeah. So, Boss Baby is pretty much the worst of all the DreamWorks stuff put together, where there's hilarious disconnects between adults and children, and the children are unexpectedly sophisticated. I took her to see The Secret Life of Pets last year, which is basically the same movie, as in pet owners are oblivious to the rich emotional and cognitive inner lives of their pets, and the pets have a whole parallel existence set up that the adults know nothing about. And this is the same movie, except with babies instead of dogs and cats. And Secret Lives of Pets was okay. It didn't have as many dated references as I feared it was going to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was moderately amusing, but this Boss Baby thing just looked dreadful.
Yeah, it does not look like an enjoyable afternoon at the cinema. And
the animation's ugly too. Which
I can't speak for you. But I don't envision us taking our daughter to go see it.
No.
And she was somewhat disturbed by the trailer, was she not?
She was confused.
Yeah.
She was confused because this does not square with her experience of babies or small children.
Exactly.
So that was, and again, like I said, it's The Secret Life of Pets. It's the same movie.
Yeah.
Only they've swapped in babies instead of kittens.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that.
Which brings us to our final trailer.
Also shown before a children's movie. No, not at all. Oh my God, not at all. I'm totally joking, because it's an Aliens trailer.
Yeah, Alien: Covenant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is a follow-up to Prometheus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it happens after Prometheus, but before Alien.
Yeah.
In the Alien multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
If I follow the
time length that goes on there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That trailer told us nothing. All it told us is that perhaps Danny McBride is the new Bill Paxton, RIP Bill Paxton.
Mm-hmm.
I was gutted. I did not expect to have that kind of reaction, by the way.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that in a bit. Yeah, anyway, Danny McBride is basically the Bill Paxton with the quips and the space cowboy attitude. And they attempt to up the stakes by letting you know early on that, everyone on this ship is married to another crew member of the ship. It's all couples because they're going to find an Eden to settle down and repopulate. And at one point, after they've landed in a wheat field and done the desultory, why is there wheat growing on this planet thing? Then someone says, shh, I don't hear any birds. I don't hear any bees. I don't hear any animals. And I immediately said, so how is the wheat getting pollinated?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just dumb. I'm sorry. It took me right out of the trailer.
My problem with the trailer is that at a certain point, you've told the alien story.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going back and filling in the backstory.
Yeah.
Because how many times do we need to, like, see someone go, oh, there's a pod opening up, and a facehugger is coming at me, oh no!
Nothing good ever happens on a planet where something with tentacles and claws both heads towards you. Mm-hmm. It's just...
And again,
I also think about what a crazy economy that the Earth has got to evolve where they're just fine with flinging expensive starships and highly trained people into space and like, meh, well, if you, good luck. We don't expect a return on investment. Bye.
So Alien is one of my favorite sci-fi movies. Oh, and also one of my favorite horror movies.
It is amazing. Like, I didn't sleep the first time I watched it on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I knew it was coming. It was just that well done.
But, at a certain point, you've exhausted the horror and the shock and the terror that comes with it, and you're just repeating the jump scares.
Yeah.
With the facehuggers. And one of the things I appreciated about the original Alien, they do a really good job, just like in Jaws, of hiding the monster in shadows. Because if you show the full monster, it doesn't look very realistic or scary. And now, in this era of CGI, we've convinced ourselves, well, now we can make everything.
Yes.
You can see everything about the monster. There's no hidden things. And that, to me, is less frightening.
Yeah. When you've got, a crew of 8 to 10 people.
Yeah.
To be, oh, Jesus, Guy Pearce is in this one, too. Of course he is. That's always a sign of quality sci-fi. it's 8 to 10 people to keep track of, and an alien, and I get that they're supposed to be solving a mystery, but... The trailer literally told me nothing other than the fact that lots of people are going to die in horrible ways, and my first thought was, why do I care?
Yeah.
You know, I really don't see why there's a stake in this. The scale isn't where it needs to be for the movie. I did see Prometheus.
You did?
Yeah, which I would add, I had to watch it like twice to get it all the way. No, seriously. Well, to be honest, this is if I have to watch a movie twice to get it, then that's a problem. It's like when I had to watch Thor the Dark World like four times before I finally was like, oh, Jesus, this is what they're trying to do.
Again, the reason I made my snorting noises, you had to watch it twice? Was there a court order that required you to watch it twice?
Because I didn't grasp it the whole way through the first time. Okay. And it bugged me because, you know, in terms of movies that are smarter than me, I refuse to believe that Prometheus is one of them.
You outwitted me this time, Ridley Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Damn you!
No, it's got a lot of switchbacks. Mm-hmm. I think Scott does some good work, but I think that the mythology for this has gotten overly complicated, possibly because it's been living in his head for so long that he has this compulsive need to get it out and make sure everyone else is as enamored of the layers that he's crafted as he is.
I can see that.
Yeah. So, yeah, was not a fan of it.
Okay.
You know.
And now they've made another one.
Yeah. Hooray. Yeah. Well, we won't be seeing it. Maybe I'll watch it on cable later. It depends. But I'm not that excited. We're going into a weird season, movie making wise, or rather movie showing wise. March and April are kind of fallow, all things considered.
Generally speaking.
Yeah. I'm definitely not watching Ghost in the Shell. I already saw the anime for that and liked it. I don't see the need to see the remake with Scarlett Johansson as an Asian android. Look, she's a good actor, but she's not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we need to talk about the new Guardians of the Galaxy trailer.
No, we've chatted that one up.
Although I do want to put it on the record, they're using Fleetwood Mac's The Chain again.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm beginning to wonder is if using tracks from Rumours is supposed to be a deliberate parallel between what was going on when that album was made and what's going on among the Guardians of the Galaxy over the course of this movie. If it's going to be rife with dissent and, you know, they do great things, but their personal lives are hot messes or what.
I think you are reading a hell of a lot into Fleetwood Mac music choices.
Oh, we'll see. We'll see. I just want it out there that thought has crossed my mind. I want it out there first before the Slate piece comes out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned Bill Paxton. You brought him up.
Did.
Do we want to talk about Bill Paxton?
Yeah. Like I said, I was really surprised by how hard his death hit me.
Well, unlike so many celebrity deaths, it's not a live fast, die hard, and he wasn't in good health. It was one of those, oh dear, it's complications from surgery, and there you go.
Yeah, He was the guy who reliably made everything better he was in.
Yeah.
And that's a really nice quality to have. And I really liked him on, and this is TV and not movies, I really liked him on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as the super cheerful Hydra bad guy.
Ah.
No, because he just had that whole Texas good old boy thing going on the whole time, and he was just cheery about, you know, and it was the perfect use for his energy and his amiability.
See, my two favorite Bill Paxton things are things that you never want to watch because they're both depressing and awful.
A Simple Plan.
A Simple Plan. He's great in that, it's such a soul-crushing movie.
Yeah.
And in a good way, yeah. I should mention. It's not a bad movie.
No, it's a great movie.
It's a great movie that you just say, well, that is something that I do not need to see again. And then the other movie of his that I really love, and I believe he directed it, was Frailty.
Frailty, yeah.
Which is, he's a crazed religious dude.
No, Matthew McConaughey is the crazed religious dude.
Okay.
And, I can't remember the plot off the top of my head, but it comes down to...
Basically, someone thinks that he's hearing God tell him to murder people.
Yeah.
And the other one is, no, that's wrong. And it turns out, no, actually... Well,
yeah.
Spoiler alert for this movie that was released 16 years ago.
Yeah.
No, as it turns out, God actually was...
talking to him.
Speaking to this guy and telling him to kill everyone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Pleasant dreams, cinema goers.
Yeah, no, it's one of those where if you have had a religious upbringing, you're just what kind of creator? This is awful.
Yeah.
Well, I felt the same way. There's that Mimi Rogers movie, Rapture.
Yeah.
I think it's called The Rapture. Where she and David Duchovny, anyway, long story short, the rapture sure does happen, and at the end of it, she decides to renounce her faith right as the angels are blowing trumpets, and like, you watch the end of that movie, and you just spend the rest of the night rocking back and forth in a room, crying quietly. Yeah, no, Frailty is horrifying, and it's a great movie, and I never want to see it again. I loved him in Big Love.
Yep.
He did a great job playing the character that he played there. And like I said, again, he's just a really nice presence in a lot of other movies.
Yes.
Or if not nice, enjoyable. I mean, he's certainly not nice in Apollo 13, but he is enjoyable.
No, he's good in Apollo 13.
No, but he's not nice. He's the one who screws up, right?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've seen that one, you and I. Yeah. He's good in that.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Solid.
Mm-hmm. That said, no one has seen Bill Pullman since Sunday either.
So. I saw, I actually turned on the TV and they were showing Casper.
Oh, wow.
Which he is in. I don't know that that counts as proof of life.
No, but, I need to see like an Instagram of Bill Pullman holding up like today's New York Times. He's
alive. Bill Paxton reading sports scores, or Bill Pullman reading sports scores. Okay, there you go.
Jeff Daniels is at home, quietly steepling his fingers and whispering, there can be only one.
I win the tontine.
Yes, exactly. Bill Paxton, I will miss him in the movies.
Yep.
It would have been nice to see him as, like, the canny jury foreman in some crime drama 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. And now we'll never get that. So there was that. So Phil, do we want to talk a little bit about movies we have seen as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent a lot of time on planes recently.
Yes.
Which affords me the luxury.
Phil got a romantic trip to Barcelona alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I would redefine romantic as I spent the entire time working in Barcelona and did not get to see many of the sights of that particular
Sagrada.
City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've never.
Mm-hmm.
Here was my sightseeing. Hey, there's the Mediterranean from this press conference I'm at.
Yeah.
That's nice to see.
Aww.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But of the three films that I saw on the various plane rides that I took back and forth between here and Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
I saw The Infiltrator with Bryan Cranston,
which
really is the perfect movie on a plane experience because it's a procedural crime drama, well acted, well paced. John Leguizamo is kept to the absolute minimum And Bryan Cranston, I would like to remind the host that Bryan Cranston is one of our greatest actors.
He is.
No.
Well, we saw him in Falcon from the Avengers is Martin Luther King. What is that movie?
All the Way.
Thank you. Okay.
On HBO, yes. He plays
Anthony
LBJ.
Plays, yeah.
He is recreating the role that he did on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Jason Isaacs, who is in The Infiltrator ever so briefly as a U.S. attorney, specifically did the movie because he said, I wanted to spend 2 days action with Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
So that was the best movie that I saw. The other two that I saw were The Magnificent Seven reboot.
Yeah.
Which
I'm a little sad I didn't get to see that with you. Because I wanted to see the reboot, and I would have liked to have seen your reaction while we were watching the reboot as well.
So I'll give you my reaction now, and trying to divorce myself from the fact that I really love the original Magnificent Seven, which in turn is a remake of The Seven Samurai. So,
which I love.
So I'm not going to be all, you can't remake that, it's a sacred text. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to remake that, at least remake it good.
Yeah.
And the problem with that, the problem with the new version, and they invite comparisons by actually taking lines from the 1960s Magnificent Seven.
Mm-hmm.
The big problem is that they give the Denzel Washington character, who is the Yul Brynner character, instead of just having him be a man of honor who wants to defend the city, they give him a backstory in which he and the big baddie have unresolved issues.
I hate backstories.
And I think that's a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
Because it
dilutes the moral motivation.
Yeah.
And that's
it certainly does.
Yeah.
Chris Pratt, who I like in a lot of things, I did not like him here.
Okay, you and I talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it comes down to there are some actors who disappear into the roles.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
Because if you're like, oh, the same guy who ran around in Tidy Whities on Malcolm in the Middle plays LBJ, you'd be like, no! But he does. The thing is Chris Pratt is a movie star.
Yeah.
And even when he was just a TV star, the kind of characters he excelled at playing are these really open, sunny, high energy. They're basically golden retrievers.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be golden retrievers with varying degrees of effective training, because certainly his character in Guardians of the Galaxy is semi-feral. But the point is these are all really, you know, high energy, amiable, sunny people. Where you can't help but be attracted to the devil may care type of approach they take to their lives. And when you have him play somebody like he played in Magnificent Seven, it doesn't work. It's like when Oliver Stone put Cameron Diaz in Any Given Sunday, and she was supposed to play this icy, closed off, conniving, scheming, you know, mogul type. That's not who Cameron Diaz excels at. She excels at characters with a sort of blithe, fizzy energy, and the strength comes from whether or not that fizzy energy is channeled and focused into something, or if it's just unfocused and the chaos is part of the fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the Chris Pratt.
Yeah, so Byung Hun Lee is in the movie as one of the Magnificent Seven. He's quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Manuel Garcia Rufo and Martin Sensmeyer.
Yeah.
They have some screen presence, and you go, no, those characters are good.
Yeah.
Also, the movie does the one thing I really hate in movies,
uh-huh.
where it, like, uses the title in the final line of the movie, because there's this narration from Haley Bennett.
Truly, where, they were a magnificent
Exactly.
No!
It. Oh, yes.
No!
No, that is exactly it. And I'm trying to think, there is absolutely no movie. Think of the best movie you really love, and think of if it was mandated by some horrible Trump administration edict that every movie must now end reciting the title of the movie in its final line. You would go, oh,
you monster!
Yeah, oh no, this is the worst thing you've done. I guess you could call us a bunch of Goodfellas.
Oh no. Truly, she was a pretty woman. Oh, Michael there? Well, some people call him the Godfather.
Actually, the Godfather actually does end with the Godfather as one of the last lines of the movie. That's one where it works. But
they close the door on K. That's the final thing.
Yeah. But generally, I was just watching that. And I was saying...
Oh, we fought Darth Vader to a standstill this time, but truly, these are Star Wars.
Well, Luke, now that you've lost your hand, I guess you could say that the Empire has struck back!
And as Darth Vader's body, he's come back to the light side of the Force. Truly, it was a return of the Jedi!
Yeah. So don't do that.
It's been a terrible war, but you see there in the distance, two towers.
Well, indeed. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you're a raider of the Lost Ark.
Did you lose the Ark? Where was it?
So, yeah, don't do that. Please, for the love of God. You can remake whatever movie you want. Just don't. Oh. So, yeah, that was not good. And then I saw Keanu, which didn't really work for me. Had some moments.
Yeah.
I like both Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key. Yeah. I'd say that movie was about 60% successful.
That's disappointing. That's a pretty low ratio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you.
All right, the two I want to talk about. I did finally see Boy by... someone was kind enough to actually tell me how to pronounce this director's name in our exclusive Phil and Lisa channel on the members only Slack. You can join when you pledge. Taika Waititi. I finally saw Boy, which was on Netflix. It still was as of yesterday. I don't know if it is now. I had gushed over the closing sequence, which has a combination of the Thriller dance and the haka as performed by the cast. The movie is fantastic. Mm-hmm. He's got a great touch with kid actors, which is not something you can say about a lot of directors. And the acting by the adults is quite well done. Another reason to see it is the woman who plays Grandma Tala in Moana is in it, playing someone closer to her own age. You ruined. I'm not even gonna.
I'll cop to this. Mm-hmm. So the problem with Moana that I have with the grandma is that it sounds like Adam Sandler doing a grandma character.
Yeah.
And our daughter plays the soundtrack nearly continuously.
Yes.
And every time the grandma comes on to sing a song, I go, oh, it's Adam Sandler singing. And then I feel terrible.
Yes, yeah, because he's earned it for me. Our daughter doesn't know who Adam Sandler is. No, Rachel House is in it as an auntie, and she's very funny. Mm-hmm. Boy is a fantastic movie. If you can find it, go see it. It is a great coming-of-age movie, where the coming of age is not treated like a trophy or a goal or an aspiration, and indeed actually makes you ponder what happens when some kids are forced to grow up before they should. Hmm. So, and it's also really funny in parts. It's beautiful and sad and hilarious and well done. And he is not an actor to beat you about the head and shoulders with something. This is actually what I also really love about What We Do in the Shadows, which is one of my comfort watches these days, where... Yeah. I've watched that movie, I think, like 3 times in the last year.
I enjoy that movie.
Oh, that's I do a good too. One. So I wanted to talk about Boy. Go see it. It's on Netflix. And the other one I watched was, I did take her on, when she had a day off from school, I took her to see...
our daughter.
Yeah. Lego Batman.
Yeah.
And funny. And I had read the criticism that the movie... There are people who are kind of lukewarm on it, and the most apt criticism I read was, if you had not seen the original Lego movie, you would receive this one much more rapturously. Because the plot is a little paint by numbers, but it is such a sly and irreverent and funny homage to Batman in his many, many cinematic incarnations. And it was super enjoyable that way. And one of the things I really do like about the movie is it takes advantage of the way kids actually play by gleefully mashing up like 8 different fantasy worlds when it comes to the villains and the other people who inhabit the Lego Batman universe. Mm. So, you know, it was a fun little watch. I'm glad I took her. And the voice work, of course, is good. Will Arnett does a great stereotypical Batman, and there are a lot of jokes. And it was one of those movies where I got a lot of the jokes because, you know, I am 38 years older than my daughter and have seen many Batman movies, but she was roaring with laughter over a lot of stuff that was unique to the movie too. So it succeeds.
So like, it's not one of those DreamWorks situations where hey, look at us doing a David Mamet joke.
No, it's not like that at all.
It's funny, kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
Buffalo.
Yeah. So those are, the movies I've seen. Mm-hmm. We got a question, actually, that I want to share from our Members Only Slack by David Southwick, who says, I'm curious if there are any trailers that Lisa or Phil have liked as standalone trailers, regardless of the movie that's associated with them. And I've seen this question, so I had time
to think. Yeah, you've had time to think about it, so why don't you
Going to say, it's the King Arthur trailer that we talked about earlier today. Because, again, like Squires of Anarchy, like, it's a great 3-minute movie. It has everything. It has, like, prog rock, and it has women lying in ponds, and there's people distributing swords, and Jude Law and his cheekbones are imperious and despotic, and Eric Bana looks concerned for 30 seconds, and Charlie Hunnam and his chest go off and have muscly adventures, and there is no way that movie can live up to it, but that trailer is just, oh, that trailer's fun. So, I like it for that reason.
I'm gonna give 2.
Uh-huh.
These are off the top of my head. Yeah. So, the original trailer for Tim Burton's Batman from 1989.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the first time I watched that, I said, I have got to see this movie.
Yeah.
It just has everything in it. It really lays out the story well. It makes you want to see the story. Mm-hmm. Watched it a few years ago, and I noted, oh, there's very little music and sound in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly just like clips from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it builds up an anticipation for the film, which I think is what trailers used to do.
Yeah.
The other one, and this is a trailer for my favorite movie ever,
mm-hmm.
The Miller's Crossing trailer. I would invite anyone to go onto YouTube and find that.
Yeah.
That is a fantastic trailer, which again, perfectly introduces you to this world that the Coen brothers have created in this movie. So that's
and everybody here knows that Miller's Crossing is your favorite.
Yeah.
Is your favorite Coen Brothers movie, number one.
Mm-hmm. Might be my favorite movie of all time, depending on what mood I'm in and how Goodfellas I'm feeling toward at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those two.
Yeah.
Those are my answers.
Mm-hmm. Inception.
Okay.
I love the trailer for Inception. The movie did not live up to the trailer in my mind, but I always really enjoy the trailer.
Okay.
So that was another one. Yeah. So yeah, that was the first question that people had for us.
Uh-huh.
And another one, Brian Gilbert asks, I'm curious what you would do with the movie you're genuinely fond of. Would you still ruin it? And you know what? Let's use Hail Caesar as an example here, since that's, I think, probably our favorite movie of the last 12 months.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
This is an example of a trailer. The trailer really spells out a totally different movie.
Yeah.
Because you thought, oh, it's going to be a caper movie with all of these people involved in the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's the movie itself is these very separate episodes that Josh Brolin is involved in.
But I think the difference between the trailer and the movie,
mm-hmm.
now that I think about it, is you don't see the presence of the fixer in the trailer.
Yeah.
You just see the dazzle. And that's the whole point to the movie, is you have somebody who has worked very hard to make his job invisible.
Yeah.
So in many ways, I think the trailer is really clever.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is very clever in a lot of other ways, just for how many different old Hollywood legends it goes through.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to criticize the movie, the biggest criticism I would make is you don't see enough about how the studio system hurts people.
Yeah.
Like, here the implication is that the studio system saves silly people from being even sillier. And it's notable that the only person who goes outside it, Bert Gurney, ultimately loses everything. Like, he loses the satchel of money and, loses his... I mean, granted, he's going to the Soviet Union, but, you know, the whole point is that the studio is protector and mother and father and just you do your job, keep your head down, it will take care of you. And there, we should have seen more of the flip side to that. Mm. And we absolutely did not. You know?
Oh, it would have been a very different movie then. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, to answer the question, no.
Yeah. I guess you can't really move... Well, you can't really ruin a movie you love, can you?
No, you can't.
You can critique it, but... Yeah. So there's that. So that's it, Phil. This was, again, our first one, and...
First of March.
Yeah, first March one.
Beware the Ides of March, because we'll be back.
We'll be back.
Stabbing you in the ear with movie stuff.
This is what's going to make people pledge. But no, the good news is now that Phil's back from Barcelona, I'll have more time to watch movies, we'll have more time to watch trailers, and off we go. Again, we want to thank you all who have pledged already, and those of you who pledged for Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies, and I do love and appreciate your engagement. Again, you become members, hit us up on the Phil and Lisa channel. I'm on, so I'm happy to answer questions and chat with you guys. And I want to also announce that we may have another exclusive member thing.
What?
We got a dude named David Wunderlich who wants...
Oh, he's the guy who made us watch Burnt.
Yes, David Wunderlich.
That son of a...
And David Wunderlich is back again with another suggestion for us. Mm. So I've talked it over with Phil. We'll be in touch with David soon.
Again, I am beginning
what
to think
What does David that... have in for us?
What...
Pledge and find
out. What
have
you got against us, David Wunderlich?
But pledge and find out what David does. All right. And once again, I want to remind everybody that if you want to pledge, you go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. Thank you so much for listening to Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies. I am Lisa Schmeiser.
Yes, you are.
Mm-hmm. And with me is Philip Michaels.
That's me.
All right. Good night, everybody.